From the KCPW Danker Studios at Library Square, this is Downtown SLC, a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. I'm your host, Jason Mathis. 500 West has been in the news a lot lately with some targeted operations from the Salt Lake City Police Department, the Sheriff's Office, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Unified Police District. Joining me today will be Salt Lake City Chief of Police Mike Brown and Deputy Chief Josh Sharman. We'll be talking about the efforts to address this crisis in our downtown community. We'll talk about what law enforcement is doing to help effect change, and more importantly, what the larger community is doing to help improve the lives of people who have mental health and substance abuse problems that may be contributing to some of the challenges in this neighborhood. All of that after this news from the BBC. Welcome back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, joined today by two of my favorite people in Salt Lake City. Sincerely, Chief of Police, Mike Brown. Chief, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jason. It's a pleasure.
It's always great to see you.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you.
And Deputy Chief Josh Sharman. Josh, thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Jason. Thanks for the invite.
Boy, you guys have got a lot going on right now.
It's a busy time.
It's a busy time.
It's a good time, though. It's exciting.
Well, you're making such a big difference, and I think that's really the reason that I think we wanted to have you on today is just, for one thing, to express our gratitude as a downtown community, to say thank you for your hard work, for your leadership. Thanks for the work that your officers are doing every day, because they have a really difficult job. And I know that sometimes police officers don't get to hear this, but the community appreciates what you do.
No, we do, and we appreciate it.
So some big undertakings, really making a difference on 500 West. I have not always been quiet in my concern about what's happening down there.
That's okay.
You both know that really well.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about what has happened over the past couple of weeks, what you had hoped for, and what you think might happen moving forward.
Well, Jason, you know, we've looked at 5th West in the Rio Grande District area for the last couple of years, and it steadily has gotten progressively more crowded. Mm-hmm. The optics are worse. I mean, it looks bad. But we've employed a lot of different resources. Josh has bike squads down there.
And we should say Josh is the deputy chief who has responsibility for downtown.
Yeah, he has that dubious task.
Yeah.
But he has bike officers, street crime officers, narcotic officers. He has a whole gambit of tools on his belt that he's been using down there. And to his credit, crime is down. Mm-hmm. Crime is down over the last year, almost 10% year to date, which is fantastic. But for various social economic reasons, there's more homeless people down there.
Yeah.
But with that being said, people try to look at homelessness and think it's a crime. And for years and years and years, we've treated it as such. We've tried to arrest our way out of homelessness. So this year, even though it's been a little bit quiet, we've been planning with our other partners, other stakeholders, and kind of a tribute to Mayor Biskupski's leadership, as she has brought together stakeholders, Sheriff Jim Winter, mm-hmm. Mayor McAdams,
yeah.
Tim Whalen, Behavioral Services, mm-hmm. and Sim Gill.
Yeah.
I mean, some big hitters.
Attorney.
Yeah. And so we've been planning operations for the last few months that have been very strategic, very surgical, and we've gone in there with the approach to let's take these individuals that are addicts and truly need help and take them to a place where they can get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been the focus of this operation. Now, no question, if you're going to go down there and sell dope, we're going to arrest you and take. We've got a spot for you, too,
yeah.
And that's in
and,
jail.
And you have arrested a couple dozen people who
yeah.
are dealers who have gone straight to jail. They don't need treatment. They need to go to jail
yeah.
for their crimes,
yeah,
for selling drugs.
That's what they do. They're
yeah.
they're drug dealers, and they're going to go to jail.
And the other side of that is you're actually taking care of people who truly have an illness of addiction and trying to find solutions for them, which I think is it's a step above and beyond what most people would expect from law enforcement, that you guys have been very thoughtful in this approach and thinking, what's the real root of this problem? It's not just about filling up the jail. It's not just about sending people to jail. It's about how do we address the real challenges and the issues that people have in their lives that lead them to be in that situation on that street at that time.
Yep. Jason, we've worked together, me and you, for years.
Yeah.
And over the past several years, last decade, we've arrested hundreds and hundreds of people down there. In fact, in 1 week, I think we arrested over 100 people.
Yeah.
And we, as law enforcement, we came together and thought we'd done a great thing. But truly, all we had done is taken a problem of addiction and arrested it and put it in jail. And it was quickly back to the street and business as usual.
Yeah.
So this is a very unique approach that we've taken to try to heal the people that truly need that help.
Yeah.
And
what do you, I was just going to ask, what do you, so you guys have been working on this all summer long. You've been doing surveillance. You've been thinking about the elements that need to come in. And I would say this too. I think that there's a perception people have sometimes that all levels of government are highly coordinated, highly synchronized, and that you're all working in concert every day on everything that you do. And I wish
that's
that was the case.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah, but that's not the case. That, you know, the Salt Lake City Police Department has a certain role and responsibility, and you have people that you're answerable to, and you have goals and metrics and obligations, and you have colleagues with the sheriff's office or with the district attorney or, you know, different jurisdictions. But it isn't always seamless. You guys don't always work as partners in the way that you're working on this. And maybe you can, Josh, maybe you can speak a little bit about how this partnership evolved over the summer, about the needs that you are working to address, and just how you're working with these other entities in addition to the Salt Lake City Police Department.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, yeah, you're exactly right that Salt Lake City has responsibility for the jurisdiction here, and where a unified police department has jurisdictions throughout the valley. And then the sheriff's office actually has a different role, mm-hmm. right? The sheriff's office has more of the incarceration and the jail and the court systems. And so while we don't necessarily not work together, they don't have a lot of day-to-day contact because they're independently siloed.
Yeah.
So what we really wanted to do was come up with a new plan, and it was really two prongs. It was number one, relentless disruption of the drug trade.
Yeah.
Right. That we absolutely want to make sure that drug dealers know that that's not a free amnesty zone. That's not, they can't just ply their trade without any consequences at all. And close second, if not 1B, would be that the people that are coming down there buying the drugs need a different form of treatment.
Yeah.
So what we did is partner with our UPD partners to provide a little bit of staffing and a little bit of more cooperation as far as the surveillance piece you talked about that we have. It's been very thoughtful, very thought out, very methodical as far as targeting very specific people to disrupt the patterns that we're seeing down there. And the last couple of weeks have shown some success.
Yeah.
And we're really excited about that. But further to those partnerships, like the chief said, when you can get the city police chief, the sheriff of the valley, the district attorney, the mayor of the city, and the mayor of the county all together, all aligned to one operation. Frankly, I mean, that's an accomplishment.
It's kind of unprecedented. Yeah.
It really is because of the level of cooperation we haven't seen.
Yeah.
Because we've never been able to push all that together, and we have here, and it's very exciting, and we're very optimistic about the possibilities.
And it seems to be making a real difference. I spoke with some business owners in the neighborhood this morning, and people are saying, you know, it's only been a week, but things have changed in the neighborhood. People understand that this is not this sort of free drug trade zone that maybe people had thought it was before.
Right.
And so I want to be clear, too, because there's a distinction between homeless people who may be in the neighborhood, people who may be using the shelter, homeless people who may be camping out on the median or spending time on that grassy median, and then other people who may have homes through the valley but who choose to come down there to party or to have, you know, a good time,
right,
or have access to drugs. And so your approach really has to think about all those different populations and the criminal element that has embedded themselves in this population, and it's difficult. Like, this is a delicate situation where you have lots of different people, many of them very vulnerable, many of them very desperate, and then also criminals embedded into this population. Like, that's a hard thing to figure out how to approach in a way that's compassionate and thoughtful and moves the needle to positive solutions.
Right. No, that is a difficult task. Really, there's a lot of moving pieces down there. And you make a good point. There's a very vulnerable population that truly needs the services that are provided down there.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of drug dealers that use them as cover for their nefarious acts. And to that point, I contacted the ACLU yesterday, and I said, you know what, you need to come down here and look at this, because I know that they were getting some comments that, hey, we're policing homelessness and
right,
making it a crime. and we weren't. And so I took representatives of the ACLU down there into the operation.
Yeah.
And unless you knew it was an operation, it was almost business as usual.
Yeah.
And I think they were very impressed with it wasn't a sweep. I mean, people keep throwing that word out there. It's not a sweep. It wasn't an occupation. It wasn't a police state.
Right.
I mean, it was like business as usual, but it was very surgical in the way we identified the drug dealers and those that were buying, and then swooped in to grab them and to take them either to the diversion center or to jail.
Yeah. Well, because you've been paying attention to this for weeks, you know who these people are. You've done surveillance. You know exactly what they're doing, what their practices are, what their business model looks like. I spoke with Michelle Flynn from The Road Home about this, and she said actually her clients, the people she's serving, feel grateful that you're down there, that this is changing the neighborhood, that it is more safe. I've thought about it. If I was homeless, one of the biggest concerns I would have is safety and security. Like, I can go to my house now. I'm not homeless. So I have a house. I can go close the door, lock it, feel some sense of security. If you don't have that sense of protection, safety is going to be a big issue. And so for those vulnerable people, what you're doing is making a difference for homeless people in that neighborhood too. You're actually making it much safer for those vulnerable people down there.
Right. And it was very telling to go to the diversion center and to show the folks from the ACLU that, because it's not people handcuffed and in shackles.
Right.
It's a very comforting environment, where the first stop is they go and talk to an LDA.
Mm-hmm.
So they have their legal rights.
An LDA is a public defender?
Yeah, public defender.
Okay.
So they have that protection in place. And then from there, they go and talk to behavioral health services for an assessment to see what they what they need. And then you have Sim Gill and his prosecutors are there. But it's not your typical jail. It's not a cell. It's a warm and inviting, comforting type area, and what we're finding is people were very relaxed. I mean, they were almost relieved to be there off the streets and looking at getting help.
I mean, my sense is that not everyone, because clearly there are some people who are not ready for help. There are some people who will choose to go back to drugs or go back to that lifestyle or whatever, but it feels like you're giving an opportunity for people to change the direction of their lives through this intervention, in the same way that I think if I had a loved one who had a drug or alcohol problem, that I'd want to intervene in their life and give them an opportunity to make a change. We're kind of doing that as a community with a lot of these folks and saying, this is an opportunity for you to get help, and we have space available now in inpatient and outpatient care for you to make a change in your life and do something different.
Yeah, you hit it right on, Jason. The fact that they have the opportunity to make a different choice than the traditional criminal justice system.
Yeah.
Right? Before this, the idea was if you got caught buying or selling drugs, especially, let's say just buying drugs, you went to jail, and that was the process. And that we hope that you would make different choices after whatever happened with the criminal justice system. I mean, we're proud to say that after this initial pilot project, that there are literally a few dozen people that have had not only the opportunity, but taken advantage of that mm-hmm. opportunity to make a life change. That they come through that process, they get into a car with one of the Salt Lake City social workers that work for the police department and a CIT police officer, and are driven right from there to, like, no kidding, well, let's take you to treatment today. Let's start.
Yeah,
I don't know,
handcuffs.
What are you on right now?
No, there's no handcuffs.
There's no waiting period. There's no quality. You just say, we'll take you right now and put you
in. We will go walk you in and set you into a bed that we have reserved and paid for you right now. Let's start. How about now?
Yeah.
And give them that opportunity. And you know our recidivism rate? We were expecting about a 75% walk-away rate. That was what they told us.
And they thought that would be good.
Yeah. That if 25%.
If you get 25% of the people mm-hmm. to take advantage of this, that'll be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be terrific. And right now, you know, the number crunchers are doing their number crunching. But it's probably more than 50% of the people are still in the program in at least 24. I mean, some of them now have been there for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And I tell you, the life-changing, the notes that we've received have just been amazing.
Yeah, in fact, did you hear Mayor Biskupski's comment this morning in the press conference?
I haven't yet.
She has received some text from a mother who wanted to thank everybody for saving her daughter's life. Her daughter was one that was picked up early, I think, in the first operation.
As an addict.
Yeah.
As someone who was addicted to drugs.
Yeah, and she was taken to the diversion center, and she elected to get in to help.
Yeah.
And she was just expressing how grateful and her gratitude to this new approach, that now her daughter is finally in a place where hopefully she can get the help. I mean, so families are coming back together.
Yeah.
sometimes we look at this mass of people and we forget that they're mothers and fathers and sons and daughters.
And they're someone's children, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, there's a family worried about these people somewhere. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Salt Lake City Police Chief Mike Brown and Deputy Chief Josh Sharman. We're talking about some recent operations that have happened on 500 West and about the future of this neighborhood and additional strategies to help change people's lives, change the dynamic, and make a safer and healthier community. We'll be right back after these messages. We're back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis, with the Downtown Alliance. This is an important episode for us today. We're talking about some serious stuff on the show today. Joining me today, two of my friends, two people I've known for several years, have utmost respect and appreciation for, Salt Lake City Police Chief Mike Brown and Deputy Chief Josh Sharman. These guys and their officers making an important difference in our downtown community, specifically over the past week and a half, 2 weeks, focused on what I think was a crisis or at least a very difficult situation on 500 West. Major intervention there, joint operation between the Salt Lake City Police Department, the Sheriff, Unified Police District, really something that Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Poskupski and Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams had a hand in. A real partnership to make a change in that neighborhood. And gentlemen, I just want to again thank you so much on behalf of the downtown community. It is so important, and I think we were some of the loudest voices expressing concern, and so I want to let you know how much we appreciate the incredible efforts that you've taken, and more particularly I want to just say thanks to the officers, because I think that they have a very difficult job, and on behalf of the downtown community I just want to let you know how grateful we are to you and your entire team.
Well, thank you, Jason. That's I appreciate it, but also thanks back to you and your group, the Downtown Alliance, and everything you do for us and the support. You're always there.
Well,
you're a partner in this thing too, so we appreciate you guys.
We're good at complaining.
No.
That's all right.
You always step up with solutions too.
Yeah. So. Well, thank you. Talk a little bit about a way forward. So past 2 weeks, a lot of action in the neighborhood. People are saying, great first step, great movement. We've seen some incredible progress in a very short amount of time. What's the way forward? What are we going to do to keep this momentum going?
I think the way forward is doing exactly what we're doing. We have tried to arrest our way out of this situation for years, and it's proven we can't do it. The way forward, I think Salt Lake City was very visionary when they stepped up through the city council, mm-hmm. and we funded those social workers.
Yeah.
Seriously, I think they are going to be the way forward for us in Salt Lake City. Josh now has the Community Connection Center open. Lana Dalton and her social workers are down there. And,
this is right across the street from all the things that have happened in that neighborhood.
200 South and 500 West, right there where everything is. But just to tell you how important that is, and then I'll let Josh kind of fill in some of the holes here. But in the last 30 days, 427 people have walked into that community center for help in one way or another.
Wow.
And that's just huge. His social workers have identified a woman since January of 2016. So in 10 months, this woman has been to the emergency room 72 times. If you do the math, that's, you know, at a low estimate, that's $1,500 per visit. That's over $108,000 in 10 months for one individual.
That's just one
individual. Yeah, one person.
Not the hundreds of other people who are down there who might use emergency services.
Yeah, so that's one. So, and that doesn't include police time, correction time, any of the other. That's just her stay at the emergency room. But with that, Josh, explain your program down about your social workers.
So this is a key step forward. When you talk about how do we move forward in this, number one, it's continuing to utilize these beds that Valley Behavioral Health and the county has funded for us to be able to make sure that the right people without a wait are given the opportunity to be in this kind of treatment. But what we've done is really changed the whole paradigm of the police department, of having social workers actually work for the police department. There really isn't anything across the country that mirrors this.
Yeah.
And what we found is, and the city council was very astute in providing us this funding, because it's paying off. It's paying off tenfold. What we're able to do is not only make a change in people's lives, but we're able to reduce the amount of time that officers are spending on situations just like that, where they're, you know, if we just solve the problem, then the officers are freed up to do something not better with their time, but
appropriate for their time. Right?
Exactly, yeah. Right. Do we want the police officer having to deal with what clearly is either a mental health issue or even a medical issue, where they would be more valuable
being police officers, not social workers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, to that point, I was talking to some officers the other day, and they said, Chief, we went on the same individual 7 times in one day. I think that's what you're talking about, Josh, right?
Oh, that's absolutely true. And it makes the difference when we're able to have a warm handoff between where it stops being a police issue and really, you know, that the person doesn't need a ticket. The person doesn't need a ride to jail. What he really needs is he needs some help, right? He needs someone to identify where he has some issues and how does he go forward. And that's a key. And what we've told our social workers is I don't want you just to say, hey, you know what, you get your life together, right? You need to go out and get your driver's license, go get your birth certificate. Right. I want them to put them in a car and actually walk them through the process. I want to drive them out, go get their ID, help them hold their hand through the process to make small life steps to get them out of the situation that they found themselves in.
Okay, so this is, I think, the most important question. What can the community do to help support this effort? What help do you need at a city, county, state level? What would you like to see the rest of the community rally around to help support this effort?
You know, Jason, I think we need some help from our legislators.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, we're paying now. I mean, you can pay for it now or you can pay for it later.
Yeah.
And we're paying for it in a redundant, broken system right now. I think if we could get some funding to further this model, I truly think this is the way to fix some of the problems that we're seeing down in this area.
Let's just underscore, too, it's happening in downtown. It's happening in Salt Lake City. The folks that you're assisting down there come from the region. They come from across the entire state. This isn't just a Salt Lake City problem. This is a problem that people are attracted to this neighborhood for whatever reason from across the state and across the region. So really, there's a statewide obligation to assist in solving issues that are generated in this neighborhood.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
The second I'll add to the chief, this pilot that we're talking about with this receiving center and this alternative to jail, there's going to become an opportunity at some point where we prove the concept, right? And then they say, we really want to actually implement this on a full-time basis, that this is the new way to do business, not like as a pop-up, not as a trial pilot, but like we see success, it's worth investing in.
It's saving money. You're making a big difference financially, even whether it's the right thing to do or not. Not spending a lot of money on emergency services, on emergency health care, on emergency services from police.
Sure.
Getting people moving on with their life is a great investment by any standard.
And when you look at the investment, when you think of just sending somebody to jail, and Sheriff Winder will be the first one to tell you, that is not the cheapest way in order to manage this kind of population. In fact, it's much more expensive on the back end than it is on the front end with some prevention and some help. Yeah. So there will be an opportunity, I think, coming forward where once this model is proven that it shows some success, that the community can support that in making some sort of a permanent process that makes this the new way to do business, not just a pilot.
Well, I'll commit to you guys right now, publicly, this will be the top priority for the Alliance at the legislative session. We'll make it
good.
A high priority.
That's great.
Because it's important, not just, again, for downtown. It's important for the entire region.
But it's
the right
real
thing
quick.
Yeah.
But make no mistake, if you're going to go down there and sell drugs, we have a room for you, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then we'll take you to jail.
If you want to sell drugs, you're not welcome downtown.
No.
Go someplace else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You guys, thanks again so much. I can't express my gratitude enough.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate you having
us
here.
All right.